It just seems so futile. You know? All these women and nothing. I feel like Superman without my powers, you know? I have the cape, and yet I cannot fly.
Well, now you understand how I feel every single day. Okay? The world is my lesbian wedding.
Hello and welcome to Gayest Episode Ever, the podcast where we talk about the LGBT-themed episodes of classic sitcoms, which is to say, the very special episodes that also happen to be the very queer episodes. I'm Drew Mackey.
I'm Glenn Lakin.
And in case that intro did not tip you off, today we are talking about Franz? Franz? Is that Franz? Is that how you pronounce
Palm
it?
Franz?
Yeah. A little-known NBC sitcom. And to discuss it, we have a special guest who's making her third appearance, I think, is a record, actually. I don't think we've had anyone on. No,
Tony did two episodes, the three.
Tony did
Golden
three.
Girls.
Okay, so you...
I'm on your heels,
you're
Tony.
You're tied with Tony, and you're making your second Friends-specific appearance. Our Friends correspondent, Emily Battaglia. Hi, Emily.
Hey, Drew.
Welcome back.
Thank you for having me again.
What is new in the world of Friends criticism, I guess? Last time we talked to you, everyone was really big on hating Friends, and I guess we haven't really talked about this. Not been as big in the media, right?
Except for the big purchase by Netflix.
They're moving Friends. It's going to HBO.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
I believe that's what I saw.
Because HBO is doing the alleged reunion that may or may not actually happen
yet. Oh, right. Yeah. That makes sense.
As our only lesbian correspondent we've had on the show, how excited are you for the return of the L Word?
Oh, I'm actually like... pretty cautiously optimistic. Like, initial reviews are like, it's campy, but, you know, they don't say it's awful. So that's good. I was listening to Otto Straddle's been doing like a recap podcast
of the original series
called To L and Back. And so my friend and I were rewatching and then following along with the episodes. So I'm feeling more amped because of that.
That is the perfect name for that podcast.
Yeah,
I'm glad someone thought about that. The only episode I've seen of that is Lobster, which is one that has the information that if you boil male lobsters, they'll help each other out of the pot. And if you boil female lobsters, they will hold each other down.
Yeah, that was early days of Max,
the
trans character.
Wait, is every episode of The L Word titled with an L Word?
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, my God. I've never watched a show, but now I want to watch it.
How could it not be? I mean, I'm glad someone realizes like, oh, we should do this. And everyone's like, oh, yeah, we totally have to do that. Yeah.
I'm really excited about that.
But it also makes me think of all the L words that like could have been episodes that probably weren't, like Looney Tunes or...
That's where you stop?
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought of was Looney Tunes. We are talking about Friends today. Specifically, we are talking about The One with a Lesbian Wedding, which originally aired January 18th, 1996. And for our purposes, we're calling it Ross's Lesbian Ex-Wife Gets Lesbian Married. We talked about it at length in... episode 30, which is not that long ago. So if you want to hear us talk about why Friends is slightly problematic because it ripped off Living Single and fairly problematic because it didn't feature hardly anyone who wasn't white and pretty damn problematic because it was thoroughly homophobic and transphobic in its comedy, listen to that. It's going to come up a little bit, but like we don't need to rehash all that because it kind of took a long time.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Oh, we didn't even scratch the surface.
No. I will remind everyone that there is that video called Homophobic Friends, that is someone cut together all the instances of homophobic and transphobic jokes on Friends, and the video is 50 minutes long. So if you want to watch a really long, dissatisfying episode of Friends, Homophobic Friends, I'll link to it in the show notes. In addition to constant gay panic from Chandler and to a lesser extent, Ross and Joy, the show has a weird attitude about Ross's ex-wife, Carol, Jane Sibbett, not Sibbett, it turns out, and her wife, Susan, Jessica Hecht. They're portrayed as being not...
villainous?
I don't actually know what the right adjective is. They're a constant source of frustration and intimidation for Ross, but the fact that we only really ever could see them through Ross casts them both in a weird light. Yeah?
I mean, I think that's the way in, right? Because he's the tie to those characters. But I actually find them enjoyable from a lesbian perspective because they don't let him get away with anything.
Mm-hmm.
They gave him shit, which I feel like is pretty true to life. So
I also think that both their performances, and especially in this episode that I want to talk about, is like they're good actors giving good performances for characters that could just be villains.
Susan especially.
Oh my God, yeah.
Because Susan is the one who I think tends to call him out more often. So with slightly different writing and a bad actress, she could have been like a joyless scold, which is not the right light you would want to cast on like the only major queer characters you feature on the show. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to blame Ross for everything. I'm just going to blame Ross for my idea that these characters are not always shown in a super favorable light. I think maybe to straight audiences, they might be intimidating because they are always correcting him and putting him in his place.
But I mean, Ross is just like rife for that. He's awful.
Right. Well, I feel like some people aren't aware that Ross sucks.
I also think the reason it doesn't necessarily come off as like that bad is because Susan's castration, especially like there's an element of pity there. Like she just sees Ross as sort of a broken man.
Mm-hmm.
She's not quote unquote to blame for that, but like she can still feel pity for him that he can't just get over it.
Right. And he's stuck in a horrible like go nowhere cycle of like on and off with Rachel.
I do think also they played it safe as many television series do with like they didn't cast like a Bull Dyke to play,
mm-hmm.
you know, Carol's girlfriend,
right,
now wife, so which would have definitely intimidated people. They chose someone who, even if she is sarcastic and kind of like picks on Ross a little bit, she has this very soft voice, mm-hmm. And she's like unintimidating, at least physically on screen.
And neither her or Carol really dress differently than Monica or Rachel really would. Maybe they dress like Monica would, which is casual, like 90s, like it's not really.
They're not wearing power suits.
Right. Although we'll talk about their wedding garb.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Aside from that.
So the only thing I'll say about like our conversation about Friends being kind of like a racist, homophobic mess, to your knowledge, have any of them ever in an interview owned up to it and been like, yeah, that's fucked up. We didn't have any non-white people. We should have done that. Because I can't think of any.
I'm not aware of any. I also feel like they... Generally speaking, in their interviews, like in the later years, like after the show is off the air, they just kind of talk about it as a fond memory. Like we were like family. And I feel like they toe that company line and they don't really get into the details.
Well, I tried to Google if any of them had said anything about like the overall tone of the show. And I found closest I found was Jennifer Aniston being interviewed for Ariana Huffington's podcast in promotion of that new Apple TV show that no one's talking about. Ariana asked her what a modern day Friends would be like. And her response was this: it isn't pretty. Now you have a computer, a television, and a phone. There's no room. We were jokingly saying that if Friends were created today, you would have a coffee shop full of people that were just looking onto their iPhones. There wouldn't be actual episodes or conversations. That's the difference. That's her takeaway.
That's also hilarious because she's on an Apple TV show. So she's like digging into people using their smartphones.
Also, does she think Friends is about the coffee shop?
That was her takeaway. Yeah, Central Perk is like a secondary location on the show. And also, keep in mind, she's saying this on a podcast, which you'd listen to on a smartphone, and presumably on Ariana Huffington's like floating city that she paid for with her divorce money. So like, I don't know that either of you really have a lot of room to imagine what normal life would be like in 2019 because you're both richer than God. Fuck you, Jennifer Aniston. I don't know.
Let's not.
That feels like you're attacking Jennifer Aniston for just...
Either she has no concept of the criticism that's been out there for kind of a while about Friends being exclusive in a kind of shitty way, or she knew that and just didn't say like, oh, I think if we did it again today, like there certainly would be like a much more diverse cast than there was when we did it originally.
Well, especially if they're working on any sort of reunion with HBO, I'm sure she's not supposed to shit talk the show right now. So if she's doing press of any kind, like it would probably behoove her to be careful.
I guess. I can't imagine them being like, you said a bad thing, Jennifer Aniston. You're not on the reunion special.
No, but it's like, you know, you don't mock the thing that, you know, is paying the bills.
Right. I just want one of them to acknowledge it.
She's being diplomatic, which is why she's in the position she is in. And yeah, like, I don't know. If you want someone to like shit talk the show, go after Gunther or something. I don't know.
In trying to figure out how to pronounce Jane Sabet's name on YouTube, I saw a Where Is He Now interview with Gunther that I did not click on. Speaking of Rachel and the Green family, Emily sent me news literally like an hour before we recorded today that Ron Liebman is the actor who played Rachel's dad, and he passed away today.
And that explains his absence from this episode.
He's not in this episode, although Mrs. Green is. And also, that's not how TV works. That's very confusing, Glenn. He was married to Jessica Walter. He was married to Lucille Bluth from Arrested Development, and they actually played husband and wife on Archer. He played Mallory's boyfriend turned husband, Ron Cadillac. And I feel bad for Jessica Walter today while you're snickering.
It's because he made a morbid joke and it cracked me up and I was trying not to just cackle about death on this podcast, but it was my first
one. We gotta laugh through it, Drew.
I mean, I laughed about death the last episode, so I think it's completely fair. We can all laugh at dead people on this show. The Lesbian Wedding of Friends was a big event. It was expected to be very controversial, much in the way the Lesbian Kiss episode of the John Goodman Show was. It wasn't. Very few people objected to it. And instead of featuring a kiss between a queer woman and a straight woman, it was an outright marriage between two gay women. The John Goodman Show's episode, December Bride, in which Leon marries his husband, actually aired months before in 1995. So
really?
Roseanne edged it out. Neither of them were the first to feature a same-sex wedding. That was, do you have any guesses? What beat Roseanne by a few years, actually?
Any show, or is it sitcom specific?
In my research, this is the one that came up first. I believe it is the first instance of a same-sex wedding on an American TV show. Rock, which you probably don't remember, but Rock lasted three seasons on...
Rock or Rock Live?
I believe it was not a live episode, because I think it was the first season. I don't think they did live episodes first season.
They did not.
Charles Dutton played Rock, and it was a show about his family. And his brother was Richard Roundtree, who notably played Shaft. And in the first season... he introduces his boyfriend. This is one of the shows we're probably going to do with the backup of this season because I don't remember it at all. And most of the time, Roseanne gets the credit for being the first same-sex wedding on TV. That was actually Rock. Shaft. Shaft was half of the first same-sex marriage on TV, which I think is nice.
I think probably in sitcom. I feel like surely some sort of soap opera.
I don't...
had a same-sex wedding first. I don't know.
I feel like, no, I feel like soap operas were very slow to introduce same-sex characters. I feel like that happened like... in the late 90s to early 2000s. Tell me if I'm wrong, people.
I mean, I guess we should note that, you know, they get lesbian married, but there's no actual kissing involved.
You don't even see them hold hands. That's out of the frame.
You see them embracing on their wedding day, and it's actually a very beautiful embrace, like, scene. Like, they're gazing upon them with affection. We'll talk about it. Anyway, no kissing.
Like, where they're dancing, you mean? Because you see them dance together a little bit, too.
They're not dancing. They're like talking to someone and Susan comes up behind Carol and like embraces her from behind and she looks back at her and it's just very affectionate and sweet.
Oh, that's interesting. But yeah, that's true. You don't see them kiss or you don't hear them exchange vows either. It cuts away before either of those things would have happened. Didn't happen on John Goodman Show either. What's his? I can't remember what the guy's name is who plays Leon's husband. It's the guy from Best in Show. What the fuck is his name? Fred Willard. Oh, there was actually supposed to be a spinoff at one point of Martin Mull and Fred Willard playing their gay couple characters from Roseanne, where they would adopt a child together. And then Don Knotts and RuPaul would play an interracial, intergenerational neighbor couple. And it did not come to pass.
What year was this?
So that episode aired in 1995. So it was something that was like Roseanne herself was in talks with the guy who wrote that episode to develop a show that would be the first gay sitcom based around Martin Mull and Fred Willard, and that did not happen. But Don Knotts and RuPaul together.
I mean, I'm sure I would have loved it.
Like maybe specifically you, at the exclusion of most other people. I found an essay that I'm going to refer to a few times in here titled So Was Friends Homophobic by Kelsey Miller. It ran on Literary Hub a few years ago, and it's pretty well done. They just do kind of a deep dive into... Susan and Carol, and they point out that they're based on a real-life couple named Deb and Rona, who were friends of Kaufman and Crane, who are the creators of the show, and Marta Kaufman was godmother to their daughters and vice versa. And Marta Kaufman does not say that she wanted to have gay characters specifically. She just felt like that was part of her world, so it made sense to include on the show. Says, we never did it to make a point. It was just that these people were in our lives, and we thought this would be good material.
I do feel like that translates in the script for the episode because they just treat it like it's normal. They don't talk about what's legal. They don't talk about what's right. Mm-hmm. They don't address the culture of it. They're just like, oh, they're getting married. That's great. Mm-hmm. There's like a little allusion to, you know, Carol's parents not being on board, but that's it.
And there's a Ross comment that we're actually going to get to very shortly, but it's Ross.
Right.
There was, so I didn't know where else to put it, so I'll just share it now. They talked to Jane Sabet, the Literary Hub article interviews Jane Sabet, and she says that she devised what she thinks is one of the show's raciest gags, which is, she says, there's one joke we kept changing. We couldn't get it right. It was the episode where Susan and I are celebrating our anniversary and Ross comes over at an inopportune moment and I have to telegraph to him that it's not a good time. So she mimes removing something from her mouth, which was her taking a pube out of her mouth. And says that was the only time I pitched something that was really outrageous and it actually got on air. Presumably because people didn't realize what she was doing.
As someone who's seen that episode, I didn't realize that's what she's doing and I want to immediately go back and rewatch the episode.
I'm picturing it.
This episode did not air in two markets. Port Arthur, Texas, about which I know nothing, and Lima, Ohio, which is randomly the place where Glee took place.
Yep.
GLAAD condemned that. GLAAD did not say anything about the lack of physical affection between the brides, which is interesting.
I guess they take what they can get,
yeah,
right?
I was going to say, take the win.
Mm-hmm. So referring to that article again, the lack of a kiss was perhaps counterbalanced to a degree by the presence of Candace Gingrich, who played the wedding officiant. She is the much younger half-sibling of Newt Gingrich, who was Speaker of the House.
We both just gasped silently.
I remember this being a big deal because this got a lot of press that because Newt was the Speaker of the House at the time and he was particularly anti-gay marriage and just very arch conservative. And he had this like wacky activist sister who was cutting her hair all short and kissing girls everywhere. And that's why she got to be in this episode. And it was kind of a fuck you to her brother, which I love that she did.
That's amazing.
Candace, who I actually think she may be genderqueer. Because various articles refer Candace as a she or a they. So I will just call her a they. Today is married to Kelly Cassidy, a member of the Illinois House of Representatives. Openly lesbian member of the Illinois House of Representatives.
Is there a book about the gay or queer siblings of conservative politicians? Because I would read that book.
No, we should probably write that though. Yeah, that'd be great.
There should be, definitely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wonder if she has like, has she ever had like beers with the Cheney daughter? Like they would uniquely share a rotten perspective on things, I'm sure. I think that's it. The only other thing I have to say about like depiction of same-sex affection on screen is that just 2 months after this, Scott Amador was murdered. Scott Amador being the guy who was on that episode of the Jenny Jones show that was about confessing secret crushes and he had a crush on his neighbor who was a man. And they filmed the episode and then the man shot him to death, which is something that happened. And they didn't cancel Jenny Jones after that.
No, because I was in the studio audience for that show.
Wait, what?
In the 90s, yeah.
You?
Yeah.
What?
My freshman year of, not for that episode, but my freshman year of college, our dorm went to be audience members in the Jenny Jones show.
Wait, they filmed in Chicago?
Yeah.
How weird.
She did not seem like a very pleasant person when the cameras were turned off or on, I guess.
I mean, we can debate about whether that matters, right?
We debated that in the Ellen episode and we didn't come to an answer and she's still Ellen. I feel like that's something that I remember vividly because I kind of had an awareness of what Jenny Jones was, which was like a very trashy, on the scale of trashiness, it was pretty far low down. I still can't believe they didn't cancel it. That's fucked up. You would cancel a show today if it was responsible for someone getting shot to death.
We should probably clarify that it's a talk show, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. For people who are not familiar, Jenny Jones was during the mid to late 90s, like rash of just like everyone getting a talk show. Mm-hmm. It was one of them.
I think she was a comedian who was on Star Search and ended up hosting a talk show. Random fact about Jenny Jones, born in Bethlehem, the real Bethlehem. So I know two famous people born in Bethlehem. Those are Jenny Jones and Jesus. I don't think they have anything else in common.
Alliterative.
Yeah. What a fun group for them. This episode was directed by Thomas Schlammy, I don't know if that's how you pronounce his last name, who is married to Christine Lotti in real life and who has done a ton of work with Aaron Sorkin, and he is credited with inventing the walk and talk.
Huh.
Yeah. I mean, I think humans in general invented the walk and talk.
As a directorial device. He apparently is the one who came up with that. He also directed So I Married an Axe Murderer, which was a movie I liked a lot when I was a kid. Hmm. Written by Dodie Abrams, who worked on Friends for all 10 seasons and otherwise is invisible online. I was unable to determine if Dodie was... I have no idea what Dodie's gender might be.
Took the money and ran. I can respect that.
Mm-hmm. So now, we're at the first scene. Right off the bat, Ross is awful.
Oh my gosh. Ugh. Yeah, my first note is Ross reacts horribly.
I've got some news. It's about us.
Oh, you and me?
No, Susan and me.
The other us.
Okay.
We're getting married.
Uh, As in, I now pronounce you wife and wife, Mary?
Well, how do you guys read the laughter?
Generously, you could say they're laughing at Ross's misfortune.
Mm-hmm.
And not at the fact that two women are getting married.
That's how I took it.
Yeah, it happens very quickly. And I know everyone at this point is familiar that Ross is like a sad sack. And he's going to be like, not emasculated, but kind of just disregarded.
It's just like a salt in the wounds moment.
Yeah. A different read is that they're laughing at the idea. He seems surprised that like these two women would marry each other. And I'm sure there's people in the audience who are also like, what? That's crazy. Because remember at the time, like it was a purely ceremonial thing that did not grant any like legal powers at all.
I do think that Ross gets at least one good line in this scene.
Anyway, we'd like you to come, but we totally understand if you don't want to.
Yeah. Well, why wouldn't I want to come? I had fun at the first wedding.
That was good.
Yeah, that was good. And then he smashes his finger in a folding chair because he's folding it angrily.
Yep.
We can talk about Susan a little bit because I don't think she came up at all in the previous episode. She's played by Jessica Hecht. And I kind of didn't realize she's been in a ton of things. She, among other things, she was on Seinfeld. She plays George's girlfriend in an episode where he doesn't read Breakfast at Tiffany's and only watches the movie and then isn't aware that the guy is gay. And she has to correct him on that. She was in Jessica Jones. She's in Succession, and she's in that Mr. Rogers movie that's out right now.
Oh, I didn't realize she was in the Mr. Rogers movie. I did know she was on Succession.
We were just talking about Succession before while you were out of the room, Drew.
Oh, good thing, because I haven't watched it yet. Do you remember who she was on Jessica Jones?
Is she the attorney's... Oh, crap.
Jerry's girlfriend? Jerry's first girlfriend?
Yes, I believe
that sounds right.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I like that then. I remember that character. I don't remember it being her. She's also on Special. She plays the main character's mom.
Yes.
And she's so good on Special. I really like the way she performs at mom.
That show's so good. Sorry. Side note.
Like, because sometimes Drew has trouble relating to gay plot lines. My takeaway was I was very invested in the mom, which is not what I thought I would go into.
Did you refer to yourself as a third person just?
Did I?
You said sometimes Drew has trouble relating to...
Mm-hmm.
Just making sure.
Sometimes Drew has trouble relating to gay plot lines, and I relate to female characters more readily. And not to knock Special at all, I left being like, oh, I really liked Jessica Hecht's performance.
Well, I think part of, we're not talking about Special on this show, but I think part of what it was trying to accomplish was like, you know, people with disabilities also can be like dislikable.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the point.
People with disabilities can fucking be dislikable.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a great takeaway, actually. So we have the theme song, and it's all the footage is from season one, and all the boys have their season one hair, which I prefer.
I will say, like, this is the first time in a long time when watching something on Netflix that I hit skip intro.
Probably wise of you. You don't have the song stuck in your head. Second scene is the debut of Dr. Drake Vermore. I did not realize that these were something that happened in the same episode. There's a lot that happens in this episode, actually. I would not have guessed.
I feel like there's, like, an extra plot line.
Yeah, there's five different plot lines in this episode, actually.
Whoa, she's pretty.
Yeah.
Oh, and she's really nice, too. She taught me all about, you know, how to work with the cameras and smell the fart acting.
I'm sorry. What?
Excuse me? It's like you got so many lines to learn so fast that sometimes you need a minute to remember your next one. So while you're thinking of it, you take this big pause where you look all intense, you know, like this.
Okay.
Oh, here's my scene.
So Dr. Drake Vermore is Joey's character on
Days of Our Lives.
Still a show. Almost got canceled, apparently. Did not get canceled. Is still on, which is crazy. Emily, as a copy editor, how irritated does it make you that in the official title card for Days of Our Lives, they don't capitalize our?
I hate it. That's the answer.
Capital D, lowercase o, capital L.
I never noticed that before, and I'm so angry.
If you Google it, the title card comes up, I'm like, oh, good thing we have a grammaticist on this episode, because she can share my frustration.
We need to move on.
It doesn't make any sense. Is this Monica's Dudley Moore hair?
That episode definitely happens earlier this season.
So, like, her hair's grown out a little bit, but she's had, like, the chop.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. This is, like, how it looks good again. She looks really good. I only remember what it looked like right when she gets the Dudley Moore chop, which is not good. And then it got modified they fixed it into something that looks nice.
Well, her plot line in this episode is that she has been asked to cater the lesbian wedding. And of all the plot lines in this episode, that one raised the most questions for me and caused me the most frustration.
Yeah. I don't think they had a caterer advising on
how... You're going to need more than one oven. Let me just say that.
More than how much notice does she get?
So the original caterer is horribly injured in a mountain biking accident, and the wedding is like a few days away. And she's like, I'll do it. But she doesn't have a catering company at this point, right?
She also admits that she's never catered before, so we can, you know, forgive a lot of the amateur
I've barely cooked before, and I could tell you that if someone asked me to cater a wedding, I'd be like, let me call some friends and see if I can, like, borrow their ovens.
Yeah, who's going to serve the food? Who's serving the food at this wedding? Not her.
Yeah, she's a guest. All of her friends are guests.
That's a great point. I'm thinking about the wedding scene later, and she's definitely not involved in the food at all.
There are cater waiters, like, passing things around, but from where do they come?
The venue?
Maybe everyone who worked on this episode had never been married or been to a wedding before. They didn't think about that. Ross does not want to attend the wedding at this point.
Are you really not going?
I'm really not going. I mean, I don't get it. They already live together. Why do they need to get married?
Because they love each other. And that they want to celebrate that love with the people that are close with them.
If you want to call that a reason.
Ross actually has I think Ross has a somewhat valid point in that if his ex were marrying a man, no one would second guess whether or not he would go to this wedding. It's only because she's marrying a woman and him not going is seen as some sort of like weird, like, emotional and political stance.
It's true. I agree with that.
Oh, see, in my head, the fact that she's marrying a woman makes it a lot easier for him to go, just because somehow that makes, like, the circumstances of their divorce less anyone's fault. This is mulligan.
It's the 90s, though, and you have to understand that, like, there was still the very incorrect mindset that somehow when a woman who is in a heterosexual relationship, like, starts dating someone of the same sex, it is viewed as an emasculation, or the man in that relationship is viewed as less than. Like, he was not man enough to keep her happy or has turned her off of men. And I feel like that's something that we even talked about with Amy's character in Everywhere Loves Raymond, the opposite, that, like, somehow when you're dating someone and they choose same-sex lifestyle, it's a reflection on you, and obviously it is not.
I will say, this is from, like, personal experience from dating a boy for so long. When I first started exploring women, he actually thought it didn't count. Like, dating a woman wasn't a threat.
That's weird, too.
Because it's, you know, there's no, there's no penis involved, basically.
That's a weird, very heterosexual man way to think about stuff.
Anyway, all this to say, the wedding is happening and currently Ross doesn't want to go, and they're kind of giving him a hard time about it.
Chandler sings a rewritten version of the Mr. Rogers theme. Oh, Mr. Rogers came out twice. That's weird.
Who's the bitterest man in the living room? The bitterest man in the living room. Hi, neighbor.
Like, not to, like, draw on the stuff from the last episode, but this is why people think you're gay. Like, yeah. You're seeing a spiteful version of the Mr. Rogers theme.
It is an enjoyable riff. It's the bitterest man in the living room. It's good.
He has a nice singing voice, too.
We've never really heard him sing before, right?
No.
Almost exit Ross and Chandler makes this weird joke about...
All right, I gotta get to work. I got a big dinosaur bone to inspect.
No, that's me.
Oh, right.
I was like, this is why people think you're gay. That's such a weird joke, too.
I thought it was really funny, and the audience doesn't get it. And then he says, oh, no, wait, that's you. Mm-hmm. And then they laugh. And I'm like, oh, I hate how much I understand Chandler's humor.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
just say anything just to be heard humor?
Yeah. Have we yet established that nobody knows what Chandler does?
He's in charge of the weenus.
Well, for his job, right? So, I mean, it kind of plays into that joke a little bit.
Also, I didn't really think about it right now. The fact that he's in charge of the weenus is also, like, kind of a innuendo.
This is why people think he's gay.
Yeah. Weekly something net usage statistics. That's what it stands for. I don't know what the E stands for. It's an acronym. Why do I remember that?
I'm not sure.
I probably heard that in, like, 1996.
I mean, you're the king of trivia, so I can understand why you remember that.
But I didn't remember so much else about this episode. For example, it took me a second to remember that this is also the episode where Phoebe becomes possessed by a dead woman.
Which happens now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they run into Phoebe and she's not herself. And she explains that.
Yeah. A woman that she's giving a massage to dies on the table. And then she feels that this woman's spirit didn't go very far. Mm-hmm. And the audience laughs uncomfortably because they don't understand what that means. And then she says that she went into her.
Mm-hmm. What
do you have a gay thing?
Do you have, it's so gay.
I was gonna say, do you ever reach around for that?
I don't need to reach very far.
Yeah,
I do think that, like, I don't know, Lisa Kudrow's performance as Phoebe is just so strikingly different than the rest of the cast in that she's actually like really acting,
mm-hmm.
and especially like in this episode and in this scene, like, you just like, I just love watching the choices that she makes, which I think. In my first viewing of Friends as a teenager, it's like, oh, she's just a weird mm-hmm. character. It's like, oh, no, these are like actual choices. She's like, that's not being random.
I think it helps that she's gone on to do a more varied list of roles than maybe the other Friends have. And she, like, I've read a lot of interviews with her and I know how far she actually is from Phoebe. She's not particularly like that in real life. And maybe I think she's farther from that character than the rest of the Friends are from who they're playing, maybe a little bit. But yeah, she's really pulling together a complete character that, like, I feel like she knows very well.
Yeah, to say that the strangest character in the cast feels the most real just is odd.
The most honest.
Is this as supernatural as a Phoebe storyline ever gets? Like, I'm trying to compare, like, on Frasier, they introduced the idea that Daphne has psychic powers, and they kind of, like, don't really do that anymore. They're like, okay, whatever. But, like, they keep up with this with Phoebe. Like, she has this, like, a whole metaphysical aspect of her character that never really goes away.
Well, and especially this episode, like, no one really questions that she's, like, that she's faking it. Like, and it seems very real. And she has, like, seemingly information that...
Right. She doesn't think she's faking it. She thinks it's real. The widower of the woman that's inside her apparently also thinks it's real.
Well, I don't know if he thinks it's real. He just wants to have sex with her.
Right. He immediately goes for the sex, which, you know, okay.
I like that.
Yeah, the joke he gets is, well, I tried.
And this is not even the last storyline to be introduced in this episode.
No, there's everyone but Chandler gets a storyline in this episode. So the next scene, we're at Central Perk, and we find out that Rachel's mother is showing up. This is the fifth storyline. There's a lot going on. Enter Rachel's mom, who is Marlo Thomas. This is the first of three appearances she makes as Sandra Green. I feel like people our age might know her from Free to Be You and Me, which is like... Did you guys have that when you were kids?
I actually didn't know her from anything but this. I was looking her up before coming over, and there was not really anything I was familiar with.
She did a book, and it had a corresponding album, and I think she sang on the album too. And it was like this thing for kids about, like, be yourself, like, positive reinforcement. That a lot of kids, I think maybe a little bit older than us, got. And I only got because I went to a Catholic school and they didn't have any new stuff. So Free to Be You and Me was still current by their standards. So it was like a record they would play for us on rainy days or something. I don't know. It was just something that was part of growing up.
She does those children's hospital commercials, right?
Yes.
That's what I know her from. Oh, it was bugging me so much. And then it just occurred to me.
She does. And I think it's because of her famous father, which I'll get into in a moment. She was also on a series called That Girl, which aired 1967 to 1971. And it was about, she was like a cute kind of manic pixie dream girl living in New York. And like, she had a bunch of temp jobs. It's very appealing. It's on Hulu. You can watch the entire thing. It's sort of like Mary Tyler Moore a little bit, but more at New Girl randomly, where she's the Zooey Deschanel character. And the weird thing is the icon for That Girl is like this outline of her swoop hair. And so in her youth, she had an iconic haircut, and now she's playing the mother of a character who also has an iconic haircut.
That joke gets called that.
And, oh, I didn't think about that in relation to that's very interesting. She's also the daughter of Danny Thomas, as in isn't
Wendy's?
That's Dave Thomas. Danny Thomas, as in, isn't Danny Thomas one from that episode of Golden Girls where they're talking about lesbians? Blanche hears the word lesbian. She's like, isn't Danny Thomas one? Danny Thomas is a famous Lebanese American. So she can.
It all ties together. You should all see the red string board Drew has pinned up in the studio.
I think it's interesting that, like, this family would be in, like, two kind of iconic, like, the family has a reference in two iconic lesbian-centric episodes of very, very popular sitcoms. It's completely accidental because Marlo Thomas was probably put in this role because she played a cute girl in New York who had a like specific hairstyle.
Actually, I did have a reach around for Phoebe's old lady possession that isn't just a gay thing.
Mm-hmm.
It is about Ross clinging to his old life.
Oh.
Carol.
Interesting.
That makes sense. Yeah.
He's just holding on. He can't let go.
He literally does that.
Yeah, in the same moment that she's seen everything and then suddenly Phoebe's depossessed.
I like that. That makes sense.
I'm on board.
Great. I check out for the rest of the episode.
It's my favorite segment of coming to this. I'm like, oh, what's Glenn got this time?
Mom is trying to let go of her old life. We don't get that quite yet. All at this point, all we know is that she's weirdly delighted to see Rachel working in an establishment that she says.
Oh, it's wonderful. Is it a living room? Is it a restaurant? Who can tell? Well, I guess that's the fun.
Yeah. Pretty much.
I like the way she dresses. She wears a lot of bright jewel tones and looks like a character in like an 80s soap opera kind of the entire time in a good way.
Yeah, I got distinct like Susan Lucci vibes.
Yes.
Are you saying this because Christmas is coming up and you expect jewel tone gifts?
Oh, I do. Now that you mentioned that, it'd be really nice.
Okay.
So the next scene, we're back in the palatial apartment and I forgot about Ugly Naked Guy. I forgot that was a running joke on that show.
How could you forget?
Who can forget Ugly Naked Guy? He's the seventh friend.
There's an unattractive nude man playing the cello.
Yeah, well, just be glad he's not playing a smaller instrument.
You have some life here, sweetie.
I know.
And she's very into her daughter's like fake bohemian lifestyle, or what she perceives to be a very bohemian lifestyle. And she's jealous of her. She's not jealous. She respects her daughter from walking away from Barry, the terrible man she decides not to marry in the first episode.
The orthodontist.
Yes. And decides that she wants to leave Rachel's father. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. What do you guys think of Monica's joke?
I don't like it.
Nope, I hate it.
All right. Tell me if this is too cute. Lesbian wedding, chicken breasts.
Oh, God. I think I'm going to be sick.
What? It's not like I'm putting little nipples on them.
It's not even a very good joke because chicken breast often gets served at weddings. Yeah. It's a very easy wedding dish. No one at a lesbian wedding would be like, get it? Like, it's a chicken breast. If it was like steamed clams or something, then you might be able to make a joke, but even you wouldn't serve that at a wedding because it's a terrible idea.
I feel like the joke is it's not served correctly, like that's so to speak. That's the kind of joke that you like chuckle to yourself when you realize, like you say, oh, I should do chicken breast, and you go, huh. That's the kind of joke it is. But she comes in so proud of herself, like, tell me if this is too good.
It might be the Thanksgiving episode, but it's definitely a Monica joke where she says, I have three breasts and a wing, and someone responds with, how do you buy shirts? That's a much better chicken preparation joke than this is.
Is that a Chandler joke?
Probably. That would make sense.
Oh, there's no one else who would say that.
Right. Then we get an ad break, and I think we should also take an ad break. Is that okay, Emily?
Sure, Drew.
Okay. Hey, Glenn, what are you doing on Saturday?
Flying to Florida. Central Florida. Very much against my will.
Oh, shoot. There's an event at a Love Bazaar that I think would be uniquely good for you. It's called Divine Dynasty, and it's a sort of open house for all kinds of healers, like Akashic readers, astrological chart readers, tarot readers, Reiki practitioners, all kinds of people there to help the broken mend themselves before the new year.
What if I like crying in the shower daily?
That's up to you. It's not the only event at a Love Bazaar this week, but even if you can't make the events, the shop makes a great place to buy a gift for the art-loving queer in your life, which honestly might actually be you, in which case, go nuts.
Stop shopping Amazon. Start shopping queer and local.
A Love Bazaar is located in beautiful Atwater Village, home to Table Cake Studios and also a worryingly healthy coyote population.
Head to 3042 Glendale Boulevard in Atwater, right off Hyperion Bridge. It's the pink and purple building with flowers on it. You know, the gay-looking one.
And if you want to see what events are coming up next, go to alovebazaar.store. Yes, .store is a thing that exists now. Or their Instagram account, at alovebazaarstore. A Love Bazaar. Find yourself here.
Drew, where's Emily?
What?
She was right here. Now that chair is empty.
Oh, no.
Thursday, you gotta see it to believe it. The Friends prom video. See Rachel's real nose, Ross's mod squad hair, and whoa, little Monica?
The camera adds 10 pounds.
So how many cameras are actually on you?
Then a knockout new single guy. And an all-new Seinfeld with a twist. Need more? An all-new Caroline. NBC Thursday.
Hey, Drew, what's going on Patreon this week?
Are we just going to move on from Emily disappearing?
Mm-hmm. If a coyote got her, maybe a bigger coyote will bring her home.
I guess that makes sense. Well, last week we had a lot of new patrons to thank, and this week we have just two people who donated at the $3 per month or more level, thus getting an on-air thank you and a random compliment from the box of compliments. I kind of feel like we should be looking for Emily.
I'm sure she'll be fine. I'm sure she'll find her way back by the time we get through this commercial.
Okay, if you're ready.
Pop. That was the box of compliments popping.
We have great Foley here. Thank you to Derek Gale.
Has the tenacity of Peggy Hill. Oh, that's good.
And secondly, a patron who started giving back in October but got skipped over somehow, and so we are thanking her now. Grace Bon Jovi, like the singer.
Both the Mary and the Rhoda.
That's pretty good.
I would accept that compliment, although I'm clearly just the Rhoda.
You're the Phyllis.
Oh, I wish.
You have Phyllis's disposition, if not her wardrobe.
Or money.
By the way, if you have donated above the $1 a month level and you've not gotten an on-air thank you, reach out on Patreon and we will get you in next week's episode. Thank you to everyone who supported the show this year.
If you'd like to pledge money to keep Drew writing compliments, please go to patreon.com/gayestepisodeever or click the link in the show notes. I do that one. I'm lazy.
Glenn, there are a lot of coyotes gathering outside the studio. Like, more than normal.
Yeah, I invited them.
Drew's in here. Hmm.
Do you want to say, and we're back?
And we're back.
Thanks, Emily. We are.
Great. We're back.
We're back at Central Perk, and everyone is consoling Rachel about the dissolution of her parents' marriage.
They didn't fight a lot?
No, they didn't even talk to each other. God, how was I supposed to know they were having problems?
You know, in my day, divorce was not an option.
Hey, look who's up.
I just can't believe this is happening. I mean, when I was little, everybody's parents were getting divorced, you know? I just figured as a grown-up, I wouldn't have to worry about this.
Well, is there any chance that you can look at this as flattering? I mean, she's doing it because she wants to be more like you.
Well, then, you know, couldn't she have just copied my haircut?
You know, it's funny. When my parents got divorced, they sent me to this shrink, and she told me that all kids have a tendency to blame themselves. But in your case, it's actually kind of true.
Is it Chandler who brings up the therapist who say that all kids have a tendency to blame themselves for divorce?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
That's a fucked up thing to say, yeah. Because he's like, actually, he's right. It kind of is her fault, but...
And I also have a note that says, wait, is Gunther cute? Because there was a shot of him in this episode, just from the side. And in my memory, everyone just talks about how gross he is.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps because he acts gross. But like, he looked kind of attractive in this scene.
I actually had the same thought. I think it's more to do with like my changing taste and my perception of like what an attractive man is. But yeah, he's like a lot closer to the kind of guy I would find attractive than any of the three guys on the show are, which is interesting.
He has strikingly pretty eyes.
He does.
No comment.
None needed. So enter an old man played by Phil Leeds, who is a character actor who anyone looking at would be like, I've seen this guy in stuff before.
Probably talking about soup. He just looks like he's the kind of face that he would talk about soup.
I assume he was on Seinfeld complaining about soup at some point, and I actually didn't find him to be on there for that. He played Uncle Mel in Everyone Loves Raymond, which was a recurring role. He died like a year after this episode. He played Dr. Shan in Rosemary's Baby. Weirdly, he is in this one episode of the final season of The John Goodman Show when they've won the lottery and the show goes off the rails. But it's the episode with the two women from Absolutely Fabulous where they're at a party and he plays an old man in that episode. That episode's other co-stars are Marlo Thomas, which is weird that those two would have shared credits, and Arianna Huffington, who comes up in this episode more than once. So I thought was weird. But yeah, weird, right?
Do they have the same agent?
I mean, I guess that would make sense. Who's Arianna Huffington's agent? She didn't have an agent. She just throws
Well, I meant Marlo Thomas.
Sure.
I definitely remember this old man from something, but not any of the credits you mentioned.
Phil Leeds, he passed away the next year.
How do you spell his last name? I'm just going to look at
L-E-E-D-S. So he is the husband of the late Mrs. Edelman, and Phoebe wants to know why his wife won't leave her body, get out of her body already.
What can I do for you, my dear?
Oh, okay. I don't know how to say this, but I think when your wife's spirit left her body, it kind of stuck around in me.
You're saying my wife is in you?
Yeah. Okay, you don't have to believe me, but can you think of any unfinished business she might have had? Like any reason she'd be hanging around?
Well, I don't know what to tell you, dear. The only thing I could think of is that she always used to say that before she died, she wanted to see everything.
Everything?
Everything.
Whoa, that's a lot of stuff.
She actually like posited it in a way that made sense. Like it wasn't like, oh, I'm being, you know, possessed. She was just like, does your wife like have any unfinished business or anything she wanted to do? Like she was asking very practical questions, which
Your wife's a ride along and I want her to get off already.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was talked about professionally and like straightforwardly. I guess that is not the right word, but it's the right meaning for right now. Gaily direct, is that what we can say?
I did have a sort of reach around for this interaction because they make a lot of jokes about how old he is and like how he spent most of his day doing nothing or like working on standing up. And I feel like a lot of this episode is about old fashioned versus new fashioned in a way. You know, like lesbian wedding is very new fashioned, although they don't actually say that. There's a lot like, you know, Rachel's mom looking to leave behind the tradition of her marriage and like.
And being charmed with everything that's new. She wants to know everything that's new in the world, which is weird.
Yeah. And they're making fun of this guy being old and a little creepy because he tries to hit on Phoebe.
I remember she also said she wanted to sleep with me one last time.
I'm sorry. There's laughing in my head.
Worth a shot, huh?
That was probably my favorite joke of the episode, though. And she's like, oh, I'm sorry. There's laughing in my head right now.
That was the best. And I think Lisa Kudrow acts it so well. She's like actually giggling to herself. It's great.
He played old man in Soap Dish, which is where I do remember him from. Because he was eating soup or some sort of meal because he was in the dinner theater that Kevin Kline was in before being brought back to the soap opera.
I'm so glad I was able to stall enough on this scene for Glenn to find what he was looking for.
He was in everything. So I was like scrolling through all these things like, well, I've seen that. And then I was like, oh, right. He was the old man who like spills his soup and starts like complaining.
But I think it'd be fun to be a character actor like that. And he's like, I play an old guy. What do you want me to do? The next scene is when it is revealed that Monica is not smart enough to run a catering company because she's cooking. How many people go to this wedding? At least 100 based on who we see in the background.
I would say maybe half that.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say 50.
Because they're in a single room the whole time.
So let's say there's 50 people at this wedding. She still thought that she was going to just cook all the food herself in her home kitchen with a single oven. So we don't actually find out. She apparently doesn't cook chicken breast, but she cooks something for them.
It's just finger foods being passed around. There doesn't seem to actually be tables.
Yeah, all the pigs in a blanket references. Mm-hmm. I forgot.
I know. You wouldn't do that. Like you wouldn't do that. It's weird that like she's roping her non-chef friends into. She recognizes that she needs more help, but she doesn't contact anyone in her chef world. I guess we don't really get to see a whole lot of her professional life on the show, I guess.
Like, I kept trying to think of workarounds for this, like, in the script, like, how they could have, like, given Monica that storyline without all these technicalities. Like, oh, well, like, what if they were, like, because, like, the raw food craze was happening around this time. They could have just been, like, raw food lesbians. And so, like, Monica could have, like, yeah, I can cater to that. How hard could it be? It's like, well, actually, that's whatever, but like
my workaround would be she's making the cake and she has all these little doodads and everyone has to help do these like cake things and that would have kept everyone busy and she could have still been a little military commander.
Yeah. Also, wedding cakes are very labor intensive and do take a long time.
Oh, yeah.
That's much better than my raw food catering.
It's the one time I had a better writing solution than Glenn ever did in the history of us talking about TV stuff.
Cut it out.
Mrs. Green comes in. She's wearing like a coat with like a giant belt around the waist, which is, again, looks like something Soap Dish you'd see in Soap Dish. I think that's how women dressed when I was like becoming aware of pop culture. And I'm like, that's a fancy rich lady. And my brain has never released the idea that a fancy rich lady wears like a bright coat with like a giant belt. And that's how you know she's like, she's got it made.
Have either of you watched The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel?
Yes.
There are a lot of big coats and big belts in that.
Yeah, there are.
Because they live in New York too, so.
They have like perfect fashion on that show.
Yeah. I watched the entire third season today. Don't judge me.
Oh, that's right. You said you work from home.
Yeah.
Mrs. Green is like, does anyone have any marijuana? I realized like, oh, they're a little bit more shocked than they would be today. That would not be outrageous at all. She probably would already smoke marijuana or like consume marijuana on some level on a regular basis.
Her generation's marijuana would have been so weak. Like she would not know what to like do with herself.
Also, New York recreational marijuana is still illegal. So I can only imagine.
All right. I forgot about that. I forget that not everywhere is like California now. And then she's like, what's new in sex? And I feel like there should have been like lesbians, I guess. Like as far as you're concerned, that's like what we're talking about this entire episode. But like,
I appreciate that they asked that question and didn't go there, though, because I feel like that would have been the obvious plug and it would have been like a joke at the expense of lesbian sex. Like they're trying to say that I feel like it would have been a joke at the expense of lesbian sex. Mm. Whereas this, they're just like, the implication is that lesbian sex is like every other sex. So it's not new.
Oh, it's probably better.
My thought in this scene was that the mom actually has the best gay storyline, even though it's not a gay storyline.
Yeah.
And it made me kind of sad.
Oh, this is so much fun. Just the girls. Do you know what we should do? Does anybody have any marijuana?
God! All right, look. No one's smoking pot around all this food.
Well, that's fine. I never did it. I just thought I might. So, what's new in sex?
Oh. What's new in sex?
Well, the only man I've ever been with is your father.
I'm dicing. I don't hear anything.
I mean, this is no offense to your dad, sweetie, but I was thinking there might be more.
Oh, I'm sorry. You know what? I cannot have this conversation with you.
All right.
I mean, God, you just come here and you drop this bomb on me before you even tell Daddy. What? What do you want? Do you want my blessing?
No.
You want me to talk you out of it?
No.
Then what? What do you want?
Well, I guess I figured of all people, you would understand.
Why on earth would I understand this?
You didn't marry your Barry, honey. But I married mine.
Well, I mean, they still get married at the end, but...
Oh, no, I mean, not that, but like, yeah, her mom just like being trapped in this loveless marriage, mm-hmm. and trying to like find sex that she enjoys.
I would have been pretty happy if she like had a fling with like someone at the wedding, and that's how her storyline ended in this episode. But they weren't quite there. That's more like a 2004, 2005 sort of sitcom plotline. Ross is not helping. Monica is understanding but very forceful in the fact that she wants Ross to help, and she threatens to stuff him with...
All right, you...
What? No, look, I told you, I am not a part of this thing.
All right, look, Ross, I realize that you have issues with Carol and Susan, and I feel for you, I do. But if you don't help me cook, I'm gonna take a bunch of those little hot dogs and create a new appetizer called Pigs in Ross.
Yep. She's not given great material this episode.
No.
She's not, and also as far as, like, weird innuendo and, like, we already have Phoebe having a woman inside her, and now we're putting sausages in Ross, and... probably was not intentional, but when you add it all up, you're like, yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff in this episode.
Is the reach around that, like, people don't understand that lesbians have penetrative sex?
Oh, probably not.
Because a lot of people are like, how do lesbians have sex?
Like, I've talked about making a podcast about asking old people how you think gay sex works.
I would not listen to that.
It'd be like, it'd be like, kids say the darndest things, only you would make, like, you would feel embarrassed the entire time.
You can't make that podcast. I'm sorry.
I would like people that just be like, here's what I think happens. You'd be like, really? Is that really what you think?
But it's also not exclusive to old people. Like, I knew a teenager who, and this is not great for podcasts, but she was trying to figure out how, like, male gay sex works, and she literally like pointed her pointer fingers at each other like and touched them at the ends. She was
E.T.
Yes, like E.T. And she was trying to figure out like how does that and that. So, you know,
I mean, just like a general podcast like Ask Old People, where each episode is a different subject. Like Ask Old People, how much do you think I pay in student loans a month?
Oh, they would
have no idea.
How much do you think college costs nowadays?
Exactly.
Ugh. And like how useful do you think a degree actually is nowadays?
Great. I mean, it's a prerequisite. College is the new high school.
Yeah. I'd love to ask him, how'd you get your first job? Oh, I applied. I was like, thanks, old man. I'd push him in the street.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we won't go forward with this podcast show. We'll stick to gay TV. the job she gives Ross is balling a melon, which also, as far as like innuendo goes, there could be something there. They don't go for it. But
why is Chandler jealous, upset?
That was the one joke, because I feel like Chandler, he doesn't get a storyline in this episode, but he has all the like zingers. They give him those, like the throwaways that I feel like were jokes they wanted to make, but like didn't fit in any plot. And they don't always, like that one doesn't make sense.
That's what Chandler is for, basically. It's like, okay, he's going to say something funny and then we're going to end the scene.
But was he like, was he peeling potatoes or what was he doing that was so grueling that balling a melon looked like such fun?
Balling a melon does sound fun.
He gets to ball a melon. That's how he says it.
Yeah.
Also, her catering, without nuance, pigs in a blanket, melon balls.
Yeah, I don't know what Carol or Susan's jobs are, but I feel like they're fancier than what they're getting out of this.
I mean, what are they expecting asking one woman to cater with like a few days' notice?
But her pigs in a blanket were like full-size hot dogs cut in half. It wasn't like cocktail weenies.
Right.
It was actual hot dogs, which is like... It's a lot of stuff in your mouth.
I love how much we're digging into the issues we have with her catering business. And I'm sure nobody watching this even thought about it.
Most people like are going to dissect the depiction of same-sex marriage. And it is very easy to get distracted by Monica being a terrible business person. And like, this being like one of the like worst lesbian weddings in the history of lesbian weddings.
Oh, poor Monica. She just came in to audition for Rachel and ended up with this gig.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Enter Carol, who does not look to the side and be like, this is what you're doing for a wedding? All right. She's distracted by the fact that she had a big fight with Susan.
What's the matter?
Nothing. Okay, everything. I think we're calling off the wedding.
What?
You're still gonna pay me, right? Or something a little less selfish?
Carol, what's the matter? What happened?
My parents called this afternoon to say they weren't coming.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I knew they were having trouble with this whole thing, but they're my parents. I mean, they're supposed to give me away and everything.
Okay, I'm sorry.
And then Susan and I got in this big fight because I said maybe we should call off the wedding. And then she said, we're not doing this for them. We're doing it for us. And if I couldn't see that, then maybe we should call off the wedding. And I don't know what to do.
I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I think Susan's right.
You do?
Look, do you love her? And you don't have to be too emphatic about this.
Of course I do.
Well, then that's it. And if George and Adelaide can't accept that, then the hell with them. Look, I mean, if my parents didn't want me to marry you, no way that would have stopped me. But look, this is your wedding. Do it.
You're right. Of course you're right.
So we're back on?
We're back on.
You heard the woman? Peel, chop, devil!
Well, I mean, the reason that Carol's parents aren't coming to the wedding is because they're not supportive of the wedding itself.
Right.
Well, that's implied. They don't actually say that.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Because, like, I thought the whole thing was, like, they say, like, but why do you have to get married?
Ross says, why do you have to get married? That comes earlier, actually. And I think we skipped over this part, but Ross is talking about, you already live together. Why do you need to get married? And Monica's the one who has to tell him, well, because they love each other. And it is that weird point in history where you're talking about a ceremony that is basically purely ceremonial and you want to do it anyway because it means something to you. And Carol's parents suck. Watching this episode did make me think, if I do get married, I want you to walk Thurman down the aisle. And have him wear like a little like.
Would I be responsible for the legal fees of all the people he bites?
They'd all be there for my wedding, so I assume they love me enough to not sue me. So
the aisle is pretty wide. You've got some room,
but you also have to. You're going to be standing with him over to the side.
That's fine. Okay. Can I pet him while I'm standing with him?
I think you'd have to.
You could also put like a cute muzzle on him.
No, he wouldn't like that.
You wouldn't like that. I don't think he'd actually bite anyone. I
famous last words.
Ross gives a very nicely written speech. I tried really hard to find a fault with it and I couldn't.
It was very sincere. I feel like a lot of the like love that characters show for Carol and Susan's union in this episode is like genuine and pretty nice. So
how long were Ross and Carol married?
Well, they had long enough to have a baby that was born before they split. No, it was after.
It was the end of first season is when Ben is born.
Yeah.
Ben, is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I know that they talk about it in later seasons because they do the alternate reality where they stay married.
Mm-hmm.
that episode, it must not have been very long.
But like, they've been married for a bit and presumably they dated for a bit. And Susan's a character that's at least in like Monica and Chandler's life. They would have known who she was for like a long time.
Trivia ding. Okay. I just remember in the first season they talk about, remember in college when Ross bought Carol that ridiculous crystal duck?
Mm-hmm.
So he's known her since college. Okay. So
she's been in their lives for kind of a long time. She might not know Phoebe and Rachel that well, but she probably knows Chandler and Monica.
It does explain why they're all invited to the wedding.
Even Phoebe.
Yeah.
Which they probably regretted.
Why? Oh, yeah.
Next scene, the wedding. Where are they? Like, it looks, in my memory, I thought they got married in like Rachel and Monica's apartment.
Why would that happen?
I mean, there's what? Yes, why would that happen? But I'm like, what is that supposed to look like? It doesn't look like anything in particular. And I'm like, I don't recognize what that set's supposed to
be. It looks like the lobby of like a rec center.
It just felt like, yeah, some sort of loft. Because, I don't know, in my head, it was elevated. Like, it was not ground level.
I assume everything in New York is not ground level. There are lesbians everywhere. And there's this one woman, and this is going to be one of the more specific references I've ever made. Have you seen Mulholland Drive?
Yeah.
Okay. I know you have.
Yeah.
There's a scene towards the end of the first half of that movie where Naomi Watts and Laura Leta Herring go back to Diane Selwyn's apartment. And it's the Snow White Apartments by Gelson's over there. And they knock on a door, and this like unpleasant woman who is coded as being Diane's ex-lover answers the door. And she's like, Diane used to live here, but now she lives over there. She still has some of my stuff. If you're going over there, I'll go with you. And then her phone rings and she doesn't. They sneak over on their own. And she's supposed, like, Diane in the second half of the movie is a lesbian. And I think we're supposed to perceive that this woman is Diane's ex-lover. And that's why she has like a weird relationship with her. And she looks identical and is dressed identically to a woman that's in the background. And it's not a nice outfit. It's like an open men's shirt all the way down. It's like a very
same colored pants.
No,
oh.
Different woman. I'll put the pictures online. And it's like, I guess that's what at least two different costume design people thought a lesbian should look like. It's very weird and specific. And it jumped out to me. And I'm probably the only person that's ever made this connection. You don't have to have
her. So it's not the same actress, it's just the same outfit.
Apparently they look identical. Okay.
They look identical, and she's...
Which is also a problem in Mulholland Drive. Not a problem, but like a story point.
I think Friends takes place in the Mulholland Drive universe, though, I think about
single
it.
White female.
Mm-hmm. I just watched that movie. Talk about a problematic movie.
So speaking of outfits at this wedding...
Oh, yes.
We can finally talk about the wedding outfits.
The wedding outfits.
How would you guys describe?
Victorian ghost.
Okay. Emily, you've written about fashion a lot. How would you, what are, I mean, you have.
I would say Carol's outfit, if we're ignoring the hat, is actually fine.
Even the buttons? The buttons were like.
Are you talking about Carol or Susan?
Oh, I'm talking about Susan, sorry.
Susan had the vest, which is ridiculous. I wasn't going to go there first. I was going to start with Carol because I liked Carol's dress. The hat's ridiculous.
She looks like a British royal.
Yes.
That was my take on that. Mm-hmm. She did get the better of the two hats, however.
She did. It has like, it's like angular. Mm-hmm. One thing I had to get over watching this as a kid was that she plays the villainous potential stepmother in It Takes Two, the Mary-Kate and Ashley movie, which came out the year before this episode.
That's so funny. She was reminding me of the almost stepmother in The Parent Trap, which is a different actress, but is a very similar character type.
Yes.
Severe blonde.
Yeah, it's Elaine Hendricks, but like, and they're like of the same, a similar era and kind of have a similar look.
But I would say that, so the actress who plays Carol, whose name you said is pronounced differently.
Jane Sibbett.
Sibbett. Mm-hmm. She has like these cheekbones, this like intense jawline that always kind of reminded me of Cruella DeVille. Mm-hmm. And so then she plays this stepmom character in It Takes Two. So I always saw her as villainous. So when I watched this when I was younger, it was like, I can't believe she's a nice person.
Right.
But I rewatched as an adult and she's quite pleasant. Anyway, her outfit's great, aside from the hat. I don't like fascinator culture.
I'm glad we had America had their flirtation with it, and they're like, okay, we're not going to pretend that's a thing anymore.
But we can't even talk about Carol's outfit because it's a clown outfit.
In Susan?
Susan, wait, sorry. Susan. Yeah, we can't talk about Susan's outfit because it's a clown outfit.
It's horror. It's like a turban given some sort of different structure. And then the buttons on her vest are each a different cameo or something ridiculous.
She's also got a Mad Hatter style hat. It's a lot.
I described it as Blossom dressed like Paddington.
It's funny to me that they put a vest on the character that's supposed to be like presumably the more butch of the two. Even I don't want to get into what kind of dynamic they have. I mean,
yeah, because she's the one replacing Ross. So you are to imply.
Yeah, I mean, I guess
it was a simpler time. You had to be a little more black and white.
I guess I see what you guys are saying, but in the way she acts and the way she dresses, I mean, she wears overalls in this episode, but she's often dressed very femininely, just like Carol and like Monica.
But just like her personality type is the domineering one. So in the wedding, where again in the 90s, you had to pick a side.
Yeah.
Yes. Are you Jack or are you Jill?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So costume, this comes from that Literary Hub article I mentioned earlier. And this is all a direct quote. Costume designer Deborah McGuire did not make their gowns in bridal white, but in soft silvers and muted earth tones. She accessorized them, each in a decorative hat, the suggestion of a veil, but not quite. And there was no question that they would be in dresses, quote from the designer. We took it very seriously. I really love the idea of these women being women, of them looking beautiful and feminine because of the stereotypes about gay women. First of all, she thought this was beautiful. She's like, okay, whatever.
My main problem with it was it implied a personality and interest or hobby that was not really established for either of these characters.
Being crazy?
Well, no, it seemed to have some sort of like fascination with like either Victorian or some sort of Elizabethan adjacent era.
It makes it look like they're from another era.
Yeah. And it's just like, that's a definite personality type. And neither of these women seem to have that sort of interest in historical fashion or trends or eras like that. I mean, they could have.
Maybe it wouldn't make sense if we knew what either of their jobs were, but I don't actually.
I mean, had they said, given a note to Monica on this catering, be like, oh, by the way, the wedding has this sort of theme.
Yeah.
We've had plenty of opportunity to talk about what the wedding is going to be. People are talking about this wedding all episode. Mm-hmm. At no point was it mentioned like, oh, and it's having this weird period specific theme to it.
No one mentioned, oh, by the way, the brides are both going to look like they're batshit crazy. Just because. I think it's interesting that the costume designer, it was very important to her that they both look very feminine because she was combating the stereotypes that lesbians were distinctly unfeminine, which is not what we do now. We're like, oh, there are a lot of different expressions that a queer woman could look like. And we someone doing this now would probably make a point to paint a variety. And there's actually not that much variety in the background characters either. Right. Everyone looks fairly traditional, really.
Actually, now that I'm thinking about it, their outfits being so zany, it's the only incident in the entire episode where their wedding feels really othered.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Oh.
Like made to be different.
So glad you mentioned that. Another quote from that same piece. Everything about Susan and Carol's wedding was designed to be as familiar and unprovocative as possible.
Incorrect.
But
just because the outfits.
Like, it mimics a heterosexual marriage, like, in almost every way. Presumably, there was a kiss and vows. We don't see that. We're going to get to that in a second. But, like, it's a very traditional wedding, despite being a same-sex wedding where they could have done whatever they want. It goes on, Candace Gingrich was there, but she's not identified and would likely not be recognizable to anyone who wasn't involved in gay activism at the time.
Yeah, I had no idea.
It was done for a very specific purpose, and in some respects is very successful. In others, it just kind of looks a little kooky now. It comes up later, but Leah Delaria shows up in a few minutes in this episode, and she recalls, she's like, there were no bull dykes in there. Like, I'm the only one wearing a suit, and mm-hmm. that's not what a lesbian wedding would really look like. That's the thing. And then I think she says, and no one played softball afterwards.
Leah Delaria, I was so thrilled to see, because she's just like, she's been who she is her entire career.
Mm-hmm. This is also the same era she was in First Wives Club. Mm-hmm. Like, so it's like, oh, you need a lesbian for your background character.
Mm-hmm. I remember the character she plays, but you see her in the congregation watching the wedding come down. I was like, that's Boo. Boo's there. Mm-hmm. I did not realize that the character I remembered from back in the day was played by Leah Delaria.
Really, if you want to talk about latest in lesbian news, there's a new lesbian dating app. Well, it's LGBTQ+. You know,
what is the pun title?
It's called Lex, which is short for Lexicon because it's a no photo app. It's like old style personals.
Oh, I like that actually.
Yeah, it's great. They like stemmed it from an Instagram account, which I followed. And now there's an app. And Leah Delaria posted on the Los Angeles area today.
In doing a little bit of research, which we'll get to in a second, I found out she's fairly recently single.
That makes sense because mm-hmm. I saw her personals ad today.
Mm-hmm. So I guess a question I would have about this wedding scene, given that article, is in the 90s versus now, I guess let's tackle the 90s first, would it have been, what would queer people in the 90s rather see? Like, is it a bigger fight to say, like, to present a queer wedding as it could be traditional?
Mm-hmm.
Or would queer people at the time have rather seen a more accurate depiction? Like, what is the more important battle to have on screen in this period?
When did Don't Ask, Don't Tell come into play?
It happened before this because the lesbian kiss episode is called Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I believe it is. I can't remember which of the two Roseanne episodes are gay themed. One is called Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I think they both aired before this, but yes.
I'm just curious if that plays into the idea of, like, you know, blend, like being as normal as possible, blending in.
Right. I can't speak for activists, but I think the people who are making decisions wanted it to look as conservative and cisgendered and traditional in forms of gender expression as possible, because we were combating the idea that, like, gay men were sissies and lesbians were bull dykes. And we wanted to tell people, like, no, they're just like everyone else. And that's not what we do now. We're like, oh, bull dykes and sissies are actually really important. And it's fucked up to pretend like they're outdated or not the thing we want people to see. That's my take.
Yeah. I don't know how cisgender really plays into it, but I think I understand what you're saying. But.
Like, cisgender is probably, cisgender is the wrong word. It is, I actually don't know what the word,
gender expression?
The
word for it
is. It's like you are appropriately masculine or appropriately feminine.
So heteronormative.
There, that makes sense. No tomboys, no fairies, no sissies, no bull dykes. There were radical gay activists who hated this in the 90s, back when it was happening, and we're like, no, don't assimilate, be weird, be queer, like, that's just really important. But I feel like they were not making the decisions about representation that we were seeing on stuff like Friends. Although I will say that the next thing we see is the officiant beginning the wedding ceremony, who again is Candace Gingrich, and she is wearing a beautiful bowl cut haircut.
Yeah,
you see it from behind, and it's interesting because the shot emphasizes her bowl cut and the fact that Carol and Susan are holding hands, but you can't see, you see their arms go down, but the hands are just out of
if
the
if you were to draw a diagram following the trajectory of the arms, their hands would be uniting.
I don't know if that was intentional or not. If they pulled it back just a little bit, you would have been able to see that. I don't think it would have deterred the shot, like ruined the shot that much.
I don't think that they have an issue with, like, that level of physical affection. That probably was just a shot choice. That would be my guess.
I would hope so. She begins, it's like a nice little greeting, and then there's the Phoebe joke that diverts your attention away from the fact that there is not a kiss.
You know, nothing makes God happier than when two people, any two people, come together in love. Friends, family, we're gathered here today to join Carol and Susan in holy matrimony.
Oh my God, now I've seen everything.
Oh, she's gone. She's gone. She's gone. Go ahead, get married. Go, go.
I mean, I guess we didn't really talk about the fact that over the course of the episode, because Phoebe's possessed, she just, like, has random bursts of conversation as the woman who passed.
Right. That's true.
So she, like, takes on the voice and she references all these old, like, older people, like, from previous generation. I love the Soupy Sales reference.
Yeah, it's played as an actual possession and no one really seems that bothered by or concerned right. about. Yeah.
So this is a thing that happens in this universe and everyone's like, yeah, cool. Yeah, that's fine. That sounds like Phoebe.
Because Phoebe's kooky. But that's also why there are all these theories later that, like, this whole thing was in Phoebe's head. Like, all of these friends, all of these scenarios, like, it's just Phoebe's imagination.
I have not heard this theory.
This yeah. is a fan theory.
I can put it in the show notes. I'll send it to you. It's an interesting fan theory. It kind of predated the Friends is racist and horrible. That kind of is, like, overshadowing that theory, but it is an interesting way to look at Friends.
Well, did we mention that Ross gives her away?
Oh, we completely forgot about that.
Yeah, Ross gives Carol away. It's nice.
Yeah, which is also nicely done because it's not stated that he's going to do that. It's a conversation that happens off screen. So when you see Susan walks down the aisle and her parents give her away, and then you see Ross giving Susan away, and it's actually
Carol.
Carol, fuck, why?
I've been having a hard time too, and I watch the show, you know, a little more than you do. So
they're both white ladies with mom names. It's normal that I would confuse them. I'm surprised one of them, there's not someone else named Linda.
There are people in real life, especially men, with like generic male names. And I have met them dozens of times and I still forget who they, like what to call them.
Tom and Tim. We have both of those. It seems ridiculous. Why would we do that to
people?
I know
so many Johns. I know a lot of Darrens, like Dan, Chris. Like I can't. They're just male 3 to 4 letter names. It's a lot.
Your name is Memily? Memily?
Emily, but it's spelled funny. Okay. So that's how I live with it.
Okay. Emily. And then even the joke about him not being ready, like he's not letting go of Carol. it's Ross being an awkward jerk, but like it's not as bad as like Ross could be. And it's very sweet that they did that.
I also feel like it's in the same cut as, you know, this woman seeing everything. And I think it's just that final passage of old fashioned to new fashioned.
I agree. Also, the fact that they're dressed the way they are and it's a lesbian wedding is an interesting combination of old fashioned and new fashioned.
True.
They're dressed like Victorian ghosts, and it's a very modern take on weddings. Then we dissolve to the cake topper, which is two brides who are much more bridey looking than these two actual
brides. Held on for a little too long because they want us to laugh at it.
Yeah, they want us to laugh at the cake topper, but nobody laughs at the cake topper, which I loved so much.
I feel like it was definitely being played as a joke.
That's so weird. This is just very
well, yeah, because now it's just like, oh, yeah. Yeah. Two women cake tower.
It's like, yeah, that's what happened. Yeah. Why wouldn't there be two women on the top of the cake?
Oh, there is a single black woman who's dancing with another woman in the background. So Carol and Susan they invited the only non-white lesbian in New York, which is very nice of them. Then Leah Delario shows up.
I miss Rose.
Oh, yeah?
I know it's kind of weird, but I mean, she was a big part of my life there, you know? And I don't know, I just feel kind of alone.
You know, couldn't help overhearing what you just said, and I think it's time for you to forget about Rose, move on with your life. How about we go get you a drink?
Okay, so nice.
Leah Delaria is a tiny person, and I did not realize that. I think because she's standing in front of Lisa Kudrow especially, she's very, very short. She's 5'1". That's according to the internet, that's how tall she is. And watching as much of Orange is the New Black as I did not realize she was that small.
Well, a lot of the actresses in that show are pretty short, or relatively short.
That's what I thought. And like, they're all like framed against each other. And also they probably shot Boo to be imposing because that's her character. Like, she's a big presence. Mm. She's quite small. She's like a head shorter than Lisa Kudrow.
I thought, are we to the interaction with Susan and Ross yet?
Mm. No, not yet.
No, this is a long scene.
It is. Yeah. Oh, how dare they linger on the lesbian wedding of it all.
Too long. Too much.
Rachel's mom breezes through and she says that she danced with a wonderfully large woman.
Hey, Mom. You having fun?
Oh, am I? I just danced with a wonderfully large woman. And three other girls made eyes at me over at the buffet. Oh, I'm not saying it's something I want to pursue, but it's nice to know I have options.
There's more alcohol, right?
And then this last we see of her. You see Leah Delaria.
You don't mean like ever. She doesn't get murdered at this lesbian wedding, does she?
She shows up in two more episodes. No. But
although she did win an Emmy for this episode, right?
Did she?
I think she did. Or was at least nominated.
Good for her. I like her.
Okay, yes, well, true. Good for her.
I'm trying to think of where we are now.
I can't believe that I like introduced a piece of trivia to Drew.
And Drew will never forgive you. This is your last time on the podcast.
That's how he received it. Yep. Okay. I'm not going to come prepared ever again.
I'm sorry. Yeah. It didn't come up in the. I forgot where we were. I forgot what happens next. So I'm stuck with the mom says she danced with women, and my notes. I don't actually have anything. I have penis schminas and that's it.
She said she had options. Yeah. Leah Delaria hits on Phoebe and then they cut, I believe, to Ross. Is he talking to Monica? And she says, look at how happy they are. And that's when we get the really romantic shot of Carol and Susan.
That's right. It's very sweet. I'm glad they got that much physical affection. I'd be interested to know exactly what was okay and what wasn't, because that is intimate and very loving. It's nice that they got that much. And then,
I mean, yeah, I will say, like, these two actresses seem to be very comfortable around each other and play like a very convincing, loving couple that's also like not just like in the throes of happiness, they're not just played as like the ridiculously happy lesbian couple. Like, they feel like a very real couple.
Mm-hmm. there wasn't another show that had as recurring of a couple, especially. And then in real life, I was like, I don't even know who was a couple back then, but I'm not sure anyone was for as long as they were.
Yeah. And Carol is gay from the pilot. Like that's the whole thing.
Although Carol is not Jane Sibbett from the pilot, which is weird.
Right.
Yeah. Actress changed, sexuality did not.
So in either, there's that nice embrace, and then that's, I believe, when the Susan and Ross moment happens.
How you doing?
Okay.
You did a good thing today.
Yeah.
You want to dance?
No, that's fine.
Come on. I'll let you lead.
Okay.
I don't know. That moment between them actually like really struck me. There was something very powerful about her performance in this scene. Like you could see as she approached the table, like her trying to find the exact right words that would like compliment Ross, but not like emasculate him, not make him more uncomfortable or feel like his relationship with his ex-wife is dying, sort of highlighting it without saying it explicitly, like, you are still an important part of her life, and it was very meaningful that you were here, so thank you.
Yeah, I loved it so much. She acts the hell out of this episode. It's great. And then she asks him to dance, and she says, I'll even let you lead, which is such, it's like a great joke.
And well thought about, because I guess she would be the kind of person who would want to lead.
Yeah, we're supposed to know that from the vest, obviously.
And Ross would definitely be the kind of person who would care about not leading.
Yeah.
Right.
And that beautiful moment's ruined.
By Chandler.
All right, look, penis schminus. Okay, we're all people.
Yes.
That's how the episode ends, isn't it?
No, they go to the scene back in the living room.
But like, the credits end, like we get the first bit of credits when he tries to hit on the woman wearing all brown who was like with Leah Delaria.
For the second time.
Yeah.
He tries to hit on the same woman.
Taupe. It's more taupe than brown.
I'll give you that.
I'll leave. I'll go.
The first time they interact, he's making a joke. He's like, it would be stupid for me to have a line now. And she just like walks away from him. Yeah. But so like he kind of gets it. And then he actually tries to hit on her at the end.
Yeah.
Which is probably a bad idea.
By hit on her, you mean he says penis schminus?
And she's just like, I don't know why you're talking to me. I have to go.
I mean, for all we know, this character is straight. Because, I mean, when he first talks to her, he's like, I shouldn't even bother, right? Which I would also roll my eyes at and walk away from.
That's true.
And then the second interaction is penis schminus, am I right? Which anyone would roll their eyes at. So, I mean, we don't even know that this woman was, you know, disinterested by her sexuality to begin with.
She was just rightly horrified by the phrase penis schminus spoken to you by an essentially a stranger.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. And then it's like, end credits. That's it. That's all you're going to see of the wedding anymore.
And then what's the credit scene?
Which of the last of who among us will be the last to get married?
Everyone just concludes that Chandler will be the last one to get married, which is actually not true.
Joey never gets married.
Chandler gets married before Phoebe gets married, right? He does.
No. Chandler does get married before Phoebe.
Gets married last to Paul Rudd, although she was married before, so technically.
And then the joke being that Ben, the baby, is in this scene, and they've considered him, and he will still get married before Chandler.
What's funny is that Matthew Perry's never been married, and so Cole Sprouse could get married before Matthew Perry.
Is that who plays the baby?
Cole and Dylan Sprouse. Well, they don't play like the baby, but they play the son, Ben, when he's a little older.
Feel old yet, Drew?
Jughead.
Yes.
Yeah.
I did not know that. I knew they were child actors, but I did not know they were specifically Ross Jr.
This is the trivia reaction I wanted.
He kind of does look like...
Good for her.
He kind of does look like he could be David Schwimmer's kid, weirdly. Like they kind of have a similar head shape now.
Yeah. Huh. Sure.
How weird.
I still marvel at the fact that for the women on this show, each of them has a different hair color. But for the men, it's just like, whatever. Dark brown. Mm-hmm. All three of you.
And at some point, Joey and Chandler have very, very similar hairstyles too, which is weird because in this pilot, they don't. And we'll never talk again about how I like their longer hair, but I do.
It's very swoopy.
Mm-hmm. Like if you have hair, you should do that with it. If you have good hair, you might as well like rock it.
I think I talked about in the first Friends episode how that gave me a complex not being able to have like swoopy hair.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Them and like Ryder Strong and the kid from Hocus Pocus and Jerry O'Connell, there's a lot of intimidating hair on TV. There's like, you basically need to have a professional stylist to do that. It just doesn't happen in real life.
Can you imagine growing up like where like peak aughts is like the Christina Aguilera and Britney Spears of the world with their like stick straight hair and I've got this curly fro to work with and I didn't know what to do with it at the time. So it's just like, I can pull it straight back and it'll look great. And it never did.
Like in a ponytail?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because my ponytail looked like, it looked like Hermione Granger in the books, not the movies where they made her like cute and shit.
Anytime I attempted to grow my hair out, my dad would accuse me of trying to have tuxedo mask hair.
Oh. You do have hair. It's worth noting. You have more hair than I do.
Yeah, I just don't grow it out.
Yeah.
Ever.
Ever. So yes, TV is a ridiculously intimidating thing to watch and it screws you up because it gives you weird concepts about how people should look. However, in the end, this episode does a pretty decent job of introducing people to the idea of a same-sex marriage and showing that they are simply wanting to be happy people who get to spend their lives with each other like everyone else ever wants to get married.
Was this, to either of you, a meaningful like moment in TV when it first aired? Emily, you said you didn't really watch Friends until...
When I was a kid, I didn't watch it really till middle school, like regularly. So that was in... like around the peak, like turn of the century. So it had aired 5 years prior.
I watched it when it was on the first episode. I probably watched it with my family. Sometimes I can remember gay stuff in sitcoms made me feel very embarrassed to watch with my family. Kind of in the way that like sometimes like gay issues being handled on TV still make me embarrassed if I'm watching in the presence of my family. I don't remember having a reaction to this one other than I think it was, I'd never seen a same-sex marriage before. And I was like, oh, that's what it's like.
I mean, my mom's best friend when I was a kid was a lesbian. So I feel like I was just exposed to it pretty early. So when I saw it on Mini, I was like, oh, that's normal.
That helps.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything else we need to say about this?
That my mom met her best lesbian friend when they played softball together.
Oh.
Yeah. My mom's straight.
Surprise ending. Woman who played softball. Not actually interested in chicks at all. And you are technically scheduled to play softball this weekend, is that correct?
I am, if the games don't get rained out. I'm on so many teams. Sorry.
Wait, how many teams are you on?
A lot. I mean, 5?
Oh my God.
They don't all play like a lot. Like like 2 of the teams are just tournament teams, so they play like sporadically out of town. And then I sub on 1, and then 2 I play like once a week. And there are no practices or anything.
It's like me being in multiple Dungeons & Dragons campaigns. They're not all playing at the same time, so that's okay.
Yes. That is actually a good comparison.
I'll take your word for it.
Memoli, if people have questions about softball or grammar and they want to ask you on the internet, what Twitter handle should they shoot those questions to?
Find me on Twitter. I love Twitter too much. It's Emelizalot, which is the spelling of my name. EmelizaLot. Or Emelizalot, which also fits my personality.
Or Emily Salad.
Emily Salad, which is what you originally thought. And you were like, is this a reference I don't understand?
Yeah.
Sure.
Glenn, if people have questions for you about softball.
Oh, I don't want to go next because she spelled so well.
You did a very good job. But that is basically her job, is to put words and letters in the right order all the time.
Also, I've had to spell my first name many, many times over the course of my life because it's different.
I've made Glenn spell his Twitter name 42 times as of...
And sometimes I still get it wrong.
Yeah. I would say you get it wrong. Like when I listen, it's like a 50-50 split.
Well, okay, what's my Twitter handle?
Well, I write wrongs, and so it's I and then W-R-I-T-E, wrongs.
Yeah, that's right.
2 episodes in a row, you've outsourced the job of spelling your Twitter handle.
Spelling in public makes you really nervous.
He's upping his stats. It's smart.
I bombed a spelling bee in first grade. I misspelled, I don't remember what word it was, but it was something.
Phlegm.
No, it was a dumber word than that, and I think it was the first person out of the spelling bee. It was very embarrassing.
What's embarrassing is that I wanted to spell phlegm just now when you challenged me.
It's from an episode of Mr. Belvedere, right? When Wesley's studying for the spelling bee. Okay. Drew, where can people find you?
I don't remember. The only spelling bee episode I remember is Full House, where Stephanie bombs a spelling bee because I think she spells sarsaparilla wrong or mnemonic. It's one of those two words. Those are both words that are hard to spell that she has to spell in those episodes. And because of that episode, I learned how to spell sarsaparilla, secret R, and mnemonic, secret M. You can find me on Twitter at Drew G. Mackey, M-A-C-K-I-E. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Gayest Episode. You can follow us on Facebook, wherever, just like look for Gayest Episode Ever. You'll find us. Listen to all previous episodes at gayestepisodeever.com or on the podcast platform you most prefer. If it allows you to give a review, please do that. They're super helpful because they help other people find this show. You know that. You've listened to a podcast before. As we mentioned earlier, we do have a Patreon, and we would gladly accept all donations. Go to patreon.com/gayestepisodeever for that. This is a Table Cakes podcast. Table Cakes is a Los Angeles-based podcast network, and if you want to find out about all the other shows we have, including the very new Underbelly LA, which as of the posting of this episode will be 2 episodes in, and they're both really good. I produced it, and I'm really happy with how it turned out. Go to tablecakes.com. You can also just go to underbellyla.com to listen to that podcast. It's all about murder in old Los Angeles. Our logo is designed by Rob Wilson. See his stuff at robwilsonwork.com. He designed the logo for Welcome to Night Vale.
We're like, and he's doing a lot of great Christmas stuff right now.
He's such a good artist. He's so good.
I don't know why he did us a favor.
Yeah, we should not have been able to afford him to work for us, but he's a very nice person. So thank you, Rob. Go check out his stuff. And if you want to fancy nice artist, pay him to make art for you. Yeah. Emily, thank you for joining us once again. We look forward to seeing you again in the back half of this season, where we're going to do, I think, Winona Ryder Friends episode.
Oh, mm-hmm. Great. I love the Winona episode.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Podcast over.
Bye forever.
Bye.
Table Cakes production.
Oh!